go ahead and come up. We're going to open a subcommittee of the Public Safety Subcommittee of Ways and Means. We don't have a quorum yet, but we are going to. Well, we're only posted for work session.
You can do it, though, babe.
Why don't we just start going through?
Yeah, we're going to just take some information.
Mr. Chair, there's a memo in front of you for me to the committee. These are the work session papers. This is the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. Major issues for this agency in terms of budget, the criminal fines and assessments, estimated revenues, are below the amount assumed in the governor's budget. The governor's revised and the co-chair's budget add $3.5 million to backfill. Their most recent forecast is down another $860,000. And while I have you, for informational purposes, I want to pass this out and quickly go over it with you. These numbers are probably not quite there, but it will give you an idea of where CFA revenues are headed. I apologize for the small print. I've been given some crap about that already by some people. But if you take a look at the box, the first box.
Is it for the record?
Whatever. I'm sorry. I didn't say the other word. But generally, if you take a look at that, the first boxed in category there, down just above the gray bar, you'll see that there's a $1.8 million deficit in right now in the most recent May forecast in criminal fines and assessment. That assumes continuing the present 30-70 split between the public safety account and the general fund as those revenues come in. Those revenues are falling mainly because the courts are not collecting as many of the revenues that go into CFAA. And then below the box, you'll see in the same place or in the same column what happens to the various programs if you proportionally spread that deficit out. For example, but I do hold debt service in DPSST harmless because we do have to pay that. But you'll notice in my recommendations at this stage that operations at DPSST take $865,000 hit, and you can go down that list and see where they are. DOJ, which is scheduled for work session tomorrow, takes some hits there in terms of the criminal injuries comp account, child abuse medical assessment, CAMI, and regional assessments. The next box to the right is we asked the Judicial Department to say, if you were given $22 million back to backfill what they identify as a hole in their budget, what does that do to revenues? If you go to the same place, you no longer have a $1.8 million deficit. You have a $1.2 million surplus. So there is that changes the nature of the projection. So that will give you an idea of what happens to CFAA. In the recommendations I'll present to you right now, my recommendations will drive us to the available revenues as of today in the May forecast. I am sure you'll want to discuss that more when you put things on the shelf.
Go ahead, Representative Hanson.
Well, is there any analyzation, or is it even possible to do analyzation based on any of the pending legislation? For example, in the House today, we passed a $1,000 fine for refusal to take a breathalyzer test that was projected to raise $5 million.
We're looking at all those things. We're also looking at the increase in base filing fees, as well as limiting judicial discretion to raise additional revenue during this upcoming biennium. Currently, a judge can reduce up to 50%. We're talking about letting a judge reduce only up to 20% of the base fine amount. So we've got projections on a bunch of different stuff. And also there's a bill in to adjust the line on what percentage of stuff goes into CFAA and what doesn't. I think the chairs of both judiciary committees, as well as myself, committed last session, as well as the co-chair on the Senate side, to to make sure these programs were held harmless to a great degree because we so radically changed the CFA funding source. Bill McGee was involved in those discussions, as was Robin Lamont and Larry Nisswinder. Doug was working on the dark side last time, so Doug was working for DHS last time.
Could you give me a list of the ones that reduced them up to 50%? In my 40 years of driving, I've never stumbled across one of those.
Yep.
So, Mr. Chair, that is sort of the condition of the criminal fines and assessment revenues at this time, and those, of course, will change as you go forward throughout the session. Moving down through the major budget issues.
We're going to convene the full committee now, but Senator Devlin has joined us. We appreciate you being here, please.
Mr. Chairman, I made the mistake of walking through the main hall.
You'll have to go with me through the garage.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, would there be a large print version of this available
for both of us?
For the new senator?
There will be a sight-impaired version of this put out pretty soon.
Chair, I will have to find some larger paper. So, if you would, I can try to find, put it on a larger sheet if you'd like.
Grecian formula makes the scalp itch.
All right. We are in rare form today. So,
Continuing down the major budget issues, Mr. Chair. Number two, this just reflects that when they built the budget for 0305, they were experienced falling CFA revenues at that time, and there were some major reductions that are partially stored in this budget in regional training, curriculum development, child abuse-related training, distance learning, and accreditation. So there. The budget that is in front of you does have some major cuts in it as a result of the CFA revenue falling during 2001-03 and extending that into the current biennium, even before the most recent shortfalls. Number three, I'm sure there will be some discussion around the new training center or new training facility. When the governor's budget was originally put together, he did not include any funding for debt service in 0305. Since then, he has decided to make one COP sale, which cost just under $600,000 of debt service for 0305. And he is wanting to move forward with that project with further debt sales throughout 0305. To continue that project on a schedule that right now does not have the funding in the budget for, and we'll discuss that when we get to that point. Number four, there are two sets of fee increases in this budget, one for the fire training program, I'll come back to that one, and one for the private security program. There is some concern about the ability outside of the private security program, whether the department has the authority to charge fees, and they have asked the Attorney General for some advice on that, but it will impact the budget, and we'll have to come back and talk about that at some point in time after they get that response. And finally, as you recall, the Public Memorial Fund, the governor's original budget, did not put any resources into that program, any new resources, and actually transferred some of the existing ending balance out. So there's about $140,000 of that in that public fund right now. Going on to the second page, the top there is a table of the what we'll call the agency-wide budget changes. These are the merit increases, vacancy savings, attorney generals, DAS assessments, and inflation. One thing I should tell you here is that any savings that we could use to offset that were savings of CFAA funds, I put back in later recommendations back into the program to offset that reduction. So those are pretty standard. I won't go through those unless there's questions except for vacancy savings, which is the next item. In terms of vacancy savings, the agency had six vacancies when the vacancy lists were run in 2003. All but one of those were filled by the time we got around to looking at this on May 5th. I asked for new information, and they came forth, and pretty much the vacancies they had open were crucial positions, and given the fact that the governor's budget included 17 fewer positions than what they started off 0103 with, and that even we've had to take further positions in my recommendations, if they go through, taking further through vacancy savings, we're going to cause them some significant issues in their training and their ability to to meet their basic mission. So that is where we are in vacancy-related savings. The one vacancy that continued throughout that they're having trouble filling is a legal services coordinator or legal education coordinator, which they feel is a very important position given the risk that law enforcement people face day-to-day on legal issues. There are four units in this budget. The first is a criminal justice training and certification program. The major issues here I've mentioned, but there's a net reduction of 15 positions in the governor's balanced budget. Almost every major component was hit in those reductions, whether it was regional training, accreditation, DARE, the Executive Development Institute, Resource Center, distance learning. There are some major reductions in there because of the falling CFA revenues. The next, I mentioned the May forecast, the next bullet, the status of the new training facility. I'll get to in a minute when we talk about policy packages and adjustments. And one of the issues that has been brought up and discussed a bit by the subcommittee is the asking local governments or other participants to pay for part of the training or for room and board costs or some other costs. If you desire to do that or look at that option any further, I do want to raise the issue a bit again about the ability, legal ability, or the authority of the department at this time to actually charge fees in this area. And again, we will have to wait until we have a response from the Attorney General. But on the surface, after a quick non-legal look at it, it is in doubt. So that's why we wanted the Attorney General to weigh in on that. The policy packages, number 108, restores 12 of the 26 positions that were cut in the building of the budget. They include restoring much of the regional training cuts, couple positions in business services to make sure they had the backbone of operating the agency, and one position leadership training. There are still reductions, as you can see listed there. This is a $2.7 million package. It reflects the CFA revenues at the time the governor's budget was put together at the end of last year, and LFO has recommended the approval because it does start to build back to what they need to do to provide the basic law enforcement, fire, and other training that they provide. Package 107.
Let's stop on 108. Diane, can you explain maybe a little bit about Package 108 again, just to refresh? What happens if we don't? Can you go through the various positions?
Sure, I can. In regional training, the positions that we're looking at are the northern position, which covers kind of Gresham area all the way out through Wasco, Grant counties, that kind of area, and the lower Willamette Valley, which covers Eugene, Junction City, Springfield, all in through there and to the coast.
And if those go away, what happens? Those eight regional training.
Basically, here it was all regional. So the eight of those positions originally was pretty much all of regional training, which was the whole state, so you wouldn't be doing regional training. Some of those are restored later down, so where we are in reality is losing the two that I indicated. But without those, we have 11 regional training councils throughout the state for the criminal justice, and we have several of those now staffed with the use of APTs and a full-time person that coordinates in that area to figure out what their actual training needs are after basic training. So when they leave basic training, we meet what's considered the base needs, but obviously a lot of practice is a lot of advanced training, there's a lot of maintenance skills that go on, and those are different to each individual area. So what these people do is coordinate with that area, make sure the training meets the needs of those agencies, in particular the smaller agencies and the rural agencies. And what they do is develop approximately a six-month calendar of what the needs are. Then we transport the equipment, the instructors, the people. We find the locations. We partner with them usually to find the locations and get some instructors in and conduct the training. And they do hundreds of trainings throughout the year. And it lets the agency send one or two people or for a few hours, depending on what the course is, versus having to come maybe all the way from Ontario to Monmouth to take a four-hour training. We actually take it to them. The trainings can range anywhere from an hour to a couple of days. So it really varies, and it really depends on the needs in the particular area.
But if these went away, the regional local government would have to train their own people.
They would have to find the means. The biggest hurdle for them is many of them don't even have the equipment, let alone the instructors to do it. So that's the reason they have come to rely on us, not only to have the equipment and transport it to them, but to also have trained instructors. Many of these courses...
What equipment they have locally?
We take firearms training simulators. We actually transport those to the area. For defensive tactics, we take all the mats, all the padded training equipment to do the confrontational simulations in, all the additional batons, all the blue-handled weapons, which obviously won't fire live rounds, all of those kinds of things. We have whole trailers full of the equipment depending on the course being taught, and it goes to the area and then gets used by the individuals and then returned, refurbished, those kinds of things.
Okay. Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did the state police participate in this regional training?
Chair Patridge, Representative Hanson, yes, occasionally they do, both as participants and as instructors from time to time. They will work with us on that. I think one of the significant pieces of equipment that I didn't mention was we actually take the skid frames and skid cars to those areas as well, which are the ones that allow you to practice driving techniques in a parking lot kind of an area. You can't do everything, but you can learn some of the skid techniques and how to control the vehicle. So we actually transport the entire vehicle with its frame to the areas as well.
Okay.
In the leadership training area, we basically have one person who handles supervision, middle management, executive level training. That person coordinates the curriculum, does the legal updates, locates all the essential instructors, and schedules those classes. When we eliminate the leadership training person, we eliminate the program, in essence. It's a one-person position. Let's see. Accreditation was something we began last biennium at the request of the constituents. They wanted to look at alternative delivery methods. One of the programs that we have since accredited is a leadership program that is with Portland State University, which has been very successful. And as a part of that entire program, they have the component that meets the supervision and middle management certifications. So that has been real productive. There's a limited number of people that can go to it or get to it because of its length and because of its cost, but for those people that are working on a degree program, it's been pretty effective.
That's three FTE?
No. That's not the whole thing. There's the accreditation program has actually set up the whole instructor certification level, the accreditation format. I just gave you one example of a larger type program that they did, but they've accredited other programs by showing that they matched either the qualifications of a job task analysis or they had the appropriate number of instructor per student ratio. They had the right kinds of instructors teaching and set them up. They also did the certification of hundreds of instructors and maintain that, and they now have that on a three-year rotation for people to maintain their certification as instructors. A fairly complex program. It actually, the board and the Police Policy Committee set up a subcommittee, which was an accreditation subcommittee, that wrestled with all the different issues that were involved in what kinds of programs did they want to accredit, and did they want to, beyond accrediting them for training purposes and for an officer's training record, did they want them to also meet the standards for certification? And so they really wrestled with that, because it's one thing, and it's very valuable to have additional education, but then the question was, did it meet the public safety need for a certification? So there were two levels that they created, and they worked through that process. One of the goals, of course, was to encourage officers to increase their education and to have it have officer training value. So the idea was to get as many courses accredited and prompt people to take them, whether they were at a college or university or wherever they might be. So that was kind of the process they went through. And it probably took them a good year to come to agreement and understanding as to how those would overlay. And so it was just coming into place when we packaged it to put it away.
What happened prior to having these three FTEs for accreditation?
It was non-existent. We didn't do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what do we gain as a result of the three FTEs?
These are gone.
These are gone.
These are the ones that are gone.
These are gone.
The bottom half of that box are the ones that are gone, for sure.
So what are you recommending, Doug? You're recommending the 8 positions in regional training, 2 positions in business services?
Right, those 12 positions.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep. Okay, the next package is 107. This establishes 2 positions. The first is a limited duration position for traffic safety coordination. This is funded with grant funds from ODOT. It also creates a permanent position for doing part-time for background investigations. And that one is internally funded from reductions in their S&S categories. They're finding a backlog and getting those investigations completed. They have used temporary employees to fill this need in the past, but DAS a year or two ago, based on some decisions, changed the rules on the use of temporary employees and making it a little more difficult so agencies do have to start asking for position authority for functions where they used temporary employees before. And that, Mr. Chair, is package 107. We recommend approval on that.
Who does? Can you explain the background check piece? DPSST does it on all the officers?
Representative Patrick, we don't do them on all the officers. This is our 100 employees that we used to have, basically, and the 300 part-time people that we do. And we do a thorough background on all the certified officers that are coming here. And that's the reason that we have done this on a temporary or part-time basis. It all depends on where we are in the hiring scheme of things as to how much and how often we use that person.
Okay. Who else does background checks in the state?
All public safety obviously has to, and they use probably the same person we do, or some of them do. There are several state police officers that are retired that do this as a sideline, but all the agencies have folks that do background checks for them. All the public safety agencies do. It's required in our statute as a part of the standards that a thorough background check is done, in fact, each time they hire with an agency.
But you need one FTE person to do that?
That's predominantly what we have done. Depending on the hiring that we're going through, it may be less, but it's one of those things that fluctuates. And we don't have this person on as an FTE. He comes just as needed.
But why isn't it as contract services, under services, and supplies, as opposed to an FTE position?
Mr.
Chair, for the record, Bill McGee from DAS. We've gone through a number of iterations with this agency about how to employ some of the folks that work for them part-time. And the Department of Justice has come in and interpreted the statutes regarding contractual relationships, temporary appointments. And as we work through this with the Human Resource Services Division, kind of the conclusion is the only way really to deal with this and following the statutes is through having position authority. The direction of the employee from the agency is sufficient that it doesn't meet the contractual obligations. There's too much direction of what this person does to be an independent contractor. They're employed. This is an AG opinion. 3-4 years ago.
For temps, it can't be repeated use.
Yeah,
but
temps is the second issue. We then looked at temp situation, and it's also too routine to be temp. So we've kind of wrestled with a number of different alternatives, and the only one that we come up with is position authority.
This person is used much the way our part-time trainers are used as needed.
Okay, Representative Hansen.
One of the things I've always wondered about, and maybe you can help me on this, if a candidate wants to become a police officer and they apply to the state police, city of Portland, Multnomah County, maybe Washington County, and they're a blue ribbon candidate, would there be a background check done by every agency, or is this information shared in a way that so that we're not, I'm wondering if any of the background checks are redundant.
Chair Patrick, Representative Hansen, each agency is required to do their own. Now, whether or not in the course of doing that, the background folks are able to coordinate with each other in doing it. There's a fair amount of confidentiality that goes on during that hiring phase, so I'm not sure just how much they could. If the agency happened to have hired the same, or two agencies hired the same person, I mean, you'd have some consistency. But otherwise, each agency, to my knowledge, does their own background. And how much they share, I can't really say. I know that when we're doing a background on someone, we'll often ask that person to give waivers from other agencies where they've been, so that hopefully we can shorten that process some by knowing what the prior background's revealed or what the prior experience has been. But in terms of coordination between the actual local public safety agencies, I'm not real sure.
In Multnomah County, we spent a great deal on background checks for deputy sheriff candidates, and I'm hoping that the same candidates weren't getting four different background checks done on but.
And following that line of questioning on the background check piece, so if you have a sworn officer who's part-time working for you, they'd be working for another agency full-time, they may be doing training for you guys part-time, you do a full-blown background check on each one of them?
Representative Patridge, on those individuals, we do not do the full, complete one. We rely on the fact that they have had one with their agency. We do rerun their criminal history and make some current, up-to-date checks on them, but we don't go into a full background check on them other than some reference checks. And we do contact their agency to see if they validate them as a good person to be instructing and that sort of thing. But no, theirs are not as in-depth as when we are hiring a full-time employee, especially those in a certified capacity.
Why don't you contract with state police, or have you looked at contracting with state police?
I haven't looked at contracting with state police, and I don't know what the cost difference would be. I have no idea.
Sure, we can ask them to do that.
Yep.
I don't think you plan.
We're not moving this today, so. Okay.
Mr. Chair, the next package, 106, is provided additional resources for training for 911 dispatch, emergency medical dispatch, and other telecommunications hiring. The source of these funds are for 911 funds from the State Police Office of Emergency Management. This funds instructors. These they had hoped in the past to use volunteer trainers in this area, but that hasn't worked out. Agencies haven't always been willing to bring forward folks to use as trainers, so they are looking for resources to for these kinds of trainers. This 911 funding comes from the admin cut that OEM is able to take. It does not. That is a statutory distribution to OEM for, I think it's up to 3% of the 911 funds. That may be a little high, I can't remember. But anyways, they use it out of that admin pool. The next one, on the top of page 4, our adjustments 1 through 5 do the vacancy savings of merits, the inflation that we talked about earlier. The total reduction there is $339,000. The next adjustment, LFO 006, this is regarding the training facility. Add $564,000 to the budget. And at this point, it does add it as CFAA funds. The co-chairs, this is the amount in the co-chairs budget. It will pay for the single bond sale or COP sale that took place in March and fulfill the obligations. The governor desires to have another $1.2 million go for bond sale or COP sale, debt service, and financing charges and two staff positions to continue the project office. At this time, my recommendation corresponds to the amount that the co-chairs. And that amount is $564,000. It's here as CFA funds. The co-chairs have put in general fund in their budget, but as we want to keep this all CFA, so we'll adjust that 70-30 split to make up the difference, or to make sure we balance across CFA and general fund resources. Again, this will probably have some more discussion before this budget passes out on what level this goes forward. Package 007.
Hold it, Representative Hansen has a question.
No.
Okay.
The issue is clear. We'll be discussing it some more. And
yes.
Hopefully make a stronger case for a little more money.
There are some other choices in terms of looking at how to finance the debt service. Some people have talked about some capitalized interest. There are some increased costs as a result of that, at least initially. Or as the thing rolls out in debt service, it does increase the debt service cost. But I'm sure, again, these will be discussed by this subcommittee and others in the future. 007, LFO adjustment. DPSST presently has an office in Salem that costs them about $9,500 a month in rent. They also, in the Monmouth site, because of the staff reductions, probably have room to put those folks into. So what we're proposing is having them give notice and close that Salem office and move that staff to Monmouth to save $189,000. There is a 24-month notice requirement in the lease. It is in a private, in a building. It is not a state-owned building. So to realize these savings, DAS will have to find another tenant, which they have identified a potential one, for to go into that site. This represents 20 months of savings to $189,000. If they do not get, are not able to get out of the leases in terms of DPSST, we recommend that they would have to find these savings elsewhere in their budget. The purpose for this recommendation is to close that CFA funding gap that I talked about, and this will get them down the road of closing that gap quite a bit. The next LFO 008 adjustment, as I mentioned before, the CFA revenue is lower than anticipated in the co-chair's budget, that $1.8 million hole. To fill the remaining gap after the rent savings and the savings that are CFA related from vacancy, merit, inflation, and those savings, the hole is $336,000. We recommend to stay at least within the current estimated revenues that they find these two positions be cut, as well as some contract and other S&S resources. This would be in the leadership program, and this corresponds with both the subcommittee's priority list as well as the agency's next reductions that they feel they could take or would in terms of their priorities, and this would reduce by two positions. And depending on what happens in the discussions around CFA and the revenues and the decisions that are made, these could potentially be restored if this is where CFA money could go. That, Mr. Chair, is the completion of the criminal justice program. In DPSST. The next program is fire training and certification. The major issues here are, like CFA, their major funding source, the fire insurance premium tax. Under current laws, unable to keep pace, there have been made some major reductions in this budget as a result of that. In addition, the governor's balanced budget assumes a passage of some type of replacement revenue or change in the law that replaces fire insurance premium tax. Right now that bill is House Bill 3051. It has passed the House and presently sits in Senate revenue. And but $670,000 of this package or this budget for fire training is dependent on the passage of that measure or some replacement to the fire insurance premium tax. This program has taken cuts in building the budget. Two positions were eliminated, and one of those positions is restored in Package 201.
And the governor's budget anticipates a $10 per day fee for selected training classes. As you'll notice down below, when we get to the recommendations, they will not need that fee increase. And again, it is questionable whether they have the authority to charge for that fee. Package 201 restores one of the two positions cut in building the budget. It restores funding for also for regional training, course materials, and costs related to student room and board. The total cost of this is $671,352,000. It is dependent on the passage of House Bill 3051 or some other measure that restores revenues to the lost fire insurance premium tax. Because of the savings from the merit savings vacancy, or not vacancy in this case, inflation, they do not need the $30,000 of revenue that the fee would have brought in, so it does solve that problem. And the other adjustments for the fire training program are the standard adjustments, as we've discussed before, which is a total reduction of $45,000. The private security program, the major issues there is that the governor's balanced budget does rely on a series of fee increases. The industry did come in, a representative of the industry, and said that the industry does support these fee increases. You can notice there in that bullet at the bottom of page 5, the fee increases and the amount of the fee increases. These increases are expected to generate $310,000 during this current biennium, and the industry representative said that one reason they support this is the fee increases because it will it's projected not to require a fee increase during 03-05 or 05-07. And it will increase their funding balance some and put a little more security into that, the ending balances and their operating revenues.
Doug, where's the fee bill in?
This is in within their current authority, is my understanding. They will have to come back next session in the Senate Bill 333 structure, where the session after they raise a fee, they come through for approval.
So we're not going to see a fee bill.
You will not see a fee bill on this budget. They also had revenue problems during 0103 and in building the package or building the budget. There was a position cut, but package 301, the first one, does buy back that position or restores the position that was cut. That is based on the fee increases, and that is $175,000. The LFO adjustments there for the standard adjustment saves $58,000. That is the fire training program. The next one is the Public Safety Memorial Fund. The major function or the major issues here I've talked about before, the governor's budget does not put any new revenues into this and transfers other revenues to the criminal justice program to backfill some of their problems or shortfalls. So there's a total of $143,000 for the program. This is probably not enough based on what's sort of coming through the pipeline and obligations to this budget to fully pay out the benefits they have in the past. The agency does have the ability under statute to adjust payments to meet what the resources they have. That is House Bill 2238 changed the benefit structure and gives the department a little more flexibility in the process of paying out these claims. Keep in mind there's also a federal program that we talked about some that has a benefit, I believe it was $260,000, but it does take up to a year to get those benefits from the federal government. It is very hard to project from one year to another. The claims on this, the current calendar year has been rather tough. They have many more claims than they have had in previous years. One of those, for example, is the Coos Bay fire that happened here not too long ago. And there are some claims related to that. The governor's revised budget does add back $400,000
which gets back to about the level they had in terms of resources for 0103. There are no adjustments to this budget, no policy packages at this time to this budget. There is no staff or inflation because it was cut so much anyways. I'm sure this will probably be an area for discussion by the subcommittee at a future date, depending on where the discussions with the governors go in terms of funding this program.
Okay.
Performance measures. There are two performance measures here. Level of officer training or performance is determined by the host agency of that law enforcement officer after the completion of basic training. It applies to police, corrections, parole and probation, and telecommunications as they come through the training at the agency. And then the second was constituent satisfaction with access to and availability of records. LFO agrees with the performance measure reviewer, who stated that DPSST may have too few measures given the scope of its responsibilities. There's no measures directly related to fire training or private security programs, and it's our recommendation that the agency, DAS, I say the Progress Board, but I'm not sure if the Progress Board has funding right now, so I'll say DAS generally, and LFO develop any further measures and appropriate and return to the next legislature and with a new set of measures, if that's the agreement among the parties working on that. These are new measures, and there is no experience to take a look at to see how they're performing, because they are brand new measures. You'll see that a lot, since the performance measure is pretty new in terms of the development in state government. We were asked to take a look at ending balances as part of that exercise. They're listed here. There are a number of operational reserves or operational ending balances. The law enforcement one, which represents less than 2 months of operating costs, and given the uncertain nature of CFA revenues, cutting these any further would create some issues and certainty in their operations. The same holds true for fire training. This represents about 2 months' worth of operating costs. Again, these revenues are uncertain, probably even more so than CFAA, the fire insurance premium tax. The private security program, this represents about 5 months of operating costs, anticipating the fee increase. Of course, it would take a statutory change if you wanted to redirect those fees to the general fund. The Public Safety Memorial Fund, this is the operational, these are really the operating fund for that, and they anticipate by the end of the 0305 session, this fund will have no spending in it, or no ending balance because of the lack of resources in the governor's budget for that program. And, Mr. Chair, that is the end of my presentation or recommendation, other than to note that the bill, which was in front of us yesterday, I don't know if we have copies in front of us today, has three appropriation lines, one for the Public Service Memorial Fund, one for debt service, and one for the operations of the department. It would be LFO's recommendation that that stands and then not to divide that any more into the other sub-budget groups that we've gone through.
Okay. Thanks, Doug. Any comments from the agency or BAM? Okay. I think because this budget's so up in the air, in terms of what we're doing on CFAA funding and what's going on, I think what I'd like to do is see those packages that we can get off the shelf right now. I think if we go to flip to page 4, I'd like to look into some of the packages on page 3 before we do anything. What I'd like to do is take a motion to adopt LFO's recommendation on package 006, which is the debt service of the currently wet bonds. We have an obligation to do those, so we can get that off the table, if everyone's okay with that.
So moved.
Senator Devlin moves the LFO recommendation on package 006 for House Bill 5049. Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. just for the record right now, Senator Devlin and Senator George, as well as Representative Hansen, Representative Patridge, are in attendance. Representative Butler is excused. Chair would entertain a motion on package 007 in regard to the LFO recommendation regarding the sale. Senator Devlin moves the LFO recommendation regarding package number 007 in regards to House Bill 5049. Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. I also think we can probably do the recommendation on the on package number 008. We can come back and readjust if there's more money that's available through CFAA, but at this point in time, I'd like to take that reduction.
Mr. Chairman, move LFO package 008.
Senator Devlin moves LFO package number 008 in regard to the House Bill 5049. Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. I think we...
Mr. Chair, how about LFO 1 through 5 in each case? Are those all right? Those are the standard reductions.
Which ones?
Zero at the top of page.
Oh, 001 through 005. We can take those two. I was looking for those on the other page, Dr. Guskin. Chair would entertain a motion on the standard adjustments for 001 through 005.
So moved.
Senator Devlin moves the LFO recommendation on standard package number 001 through 005 in regard to the Criminal Justice Training Certification Program to House Bill 5049. Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. I'd flip this over then to page 5. Page five is the fire training piece. I'm not sure what's happening with the fire insurance premium tax, so I wouldn't take package 201 right now. I'd just leave that. We can't take the standard adjustments outlined above, though, for LFO recommendation 001 through 005 for the fire training and certification program. Senator Devlin.
Mr. Chairman, were you just going to do the standard adjustment?
Yeah, I was just going to do the LFO 001 through 005 because we haven't resolved the issues regarding
so
the fire
Mr.
insurance.
Chairman.
Senator Devlin moves LFO recommendation 001 through 005 in regards to the fire training certification program to House Bill 5049. Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. I think we can flip to page 6 then under the private security program. It appears that we can make the, this is an other funds budget. Are you okay to go forward with this particular piece, Senator George?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, we'll require a fee increase, right. But we're not voting mm-hmm. on a fee increase. You're
right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, the chair would entertain a motion for policy package number on the private security program for policy package number 301. If people are okay with that.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Devlin moves policy package number 301 of the private security program. Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. The chair would also entertain a motion for the standard deduct adjustments in it.
LFO.
Oh, the LFO standard adjustments 001 through 005.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Devlin moves the LFO recommendation 001 through 005 in regards to a private security program for House Bill 5049. Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Chair would also entertain a motion, I think on page 7. I would agree, or if we want to have a little discussion about the performance measures, I think that that's really the only other thing that we have that's outstanding right now that would be left in terms of the approvals, and the rest of it I plan on shelving unless there's other issues. But I would agree with the LFO recommendation. I think we probably need to take a look at some performance measures. They got some recommendations, I think, from the Progress Board. Is that correct?
There's a performance measure committee that looked at everyone, and the reviewer there mentioned what I outlined there.
Yeah, so I'd like DPSST to go back and take a look at that, the board to take a look at really how they look at the effectiveness of the agency as well, and maybe take that to the board as well to take a look at. So
I'd like to ask for a motion unless people have specific discussions that they would like to entertain.
And the only thing I would ask is, in terms of LFO's recommendation, is it basically going to suffice that we discuss that we agree with this recommendation, or are we actually going to put a budget note in to the effect that...
I think this will be part of the budget discussion. Is that your plan, Doug? It'll just be part of the budget report at this point in time.
I'll move the LFO recommendation.
Senator Devlin moves the LFO recommendation in regards to performance measures for DPSST in total. Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Can you bring those next time, Doug, when we work session? Just
the
recommendations from the committee.
Okay.
So at least everyone has a better idea.
Actually, I'll bring them. It's in the budget notebooks.
Okay. Well, then we'll look at them in the budget notebooks. If you'll just denote that for next time.
Yes.
If anyone wants to look at those, just send out an email to us and say if anyone wants to look at those performance measures. That's what I had. If people have questions about the other funds, ending balances, people have questions about other pieces and parts of the budget. Senator or Representative Hansen?
Well, my concern is on the facility, mm-hmm. and looking at any way to expand beyond what the co-chairs have allocated in terms of getting, I look at it as an economic development opportunity. That if we can actually get construction work started on that, I think it brings general revenue to the state. And I think I've got indications that construction revenue produces 26 jobs and an average of about $40,000 per job for each $1 million expended. So in terms of bridge financing to get the facility moving a little quicker, if it actually creates jobs during this biennium, I think we can do it in a way that's cost effective to the general fund this biennium, and I hope we explore that before we make the final recommendation. Certainly in light of the other fund revenues available that could be changing, I think. This isn't just a public works project. I mean, it's something that's been long identified. It's needed. This is probably a good time for us to be building it from a standpoint that I don't expect there will be as much training going on in this next biennium as in the future. Obviously, when we're laying off state police, we're not going to be involved in training them when local government is in short dollars. Although PERS retirements could possibly trigger more need, but I think so. This is kind of the lull before the storm, and it might be good. Good public policy to get that facility up and running as soon as possible because it's going to be desperately needed at some point in the future.
Senator George.
We can switch over to policy package 107. I would like some clarification on this ODOT grant coming in, because obviously that's in front of our committee. What is that going to buy for ODOT? What are they getting for that?
If you don't mind, I'll have Eric Gablis come up. He oversees this, one of his staff people, and we've had it actually for a while. Does a number of programs.
Thank you, Chair Patrick. Senator George, for the record, my name is Eric Alex. I'm the Training Division Director at DPSST. This package has actually been a partnership we've had with ODOT for a number of years, and ODOT identified that one of the critical missions of highway safety is law enforcement. However, ODOT identified that it didn't have a law enforcement person in-house that had the expertise to identify what training was necessary and also coordinate that training with the local law enforcement agencies. What this program does is primarily work within the National Highway Traffic Safety Law Enforcement Program. It's NHTSA's liaison through ODOT to law enforcement throughout the state. Some of the programs we're currently working on are standardized field sobriety testing, or DUI, enforcement. Also, the seatbelt enforcement program, the radar LIDAR program, or speed measurement program. In the past, we've also done motor officer training with this program. So really, those different aspects of law enforcement on highways that come through the NHTSA projects, and we basically are the liaison to the local agencies and not only coordinate the training but also deliver the training.
your primary delivery, though, in that package is not ODOT employees.
No.
Carrying out, training the folks who are going to carry out the programs that are coming through the federal process.
Chair Patrick, Senator George, you are correct. We are in essence a partner with ODOT. We work with the traffic safety unit at ODOT, and we train law enforcement, not ODOT employees.
Okay. Other issues or questions? Okay. If there's nothing else, I'm going to close the public hearing. All right, in the work session on House Bill 5049 at this point in time, and we'll come back and revisit this at some future point in time as the budget gets further negotiated. So I'm closing the hearing on House Bill 5049. Before I close the committee, until tomorrow we have the Department of Justice budget.
Mr. Chair, the Department of Justice budget is up. You'll have the memo. I've had some formatting changes to make, and we'll have it delivered to your office this afternoon, probably within the hour. And that is also that's scheduled for Thursday. There's no meeting on Friday. Justice is on the schedule for Tuesday. Monday's a holiday. Or, excuse me, an in-district day.
Anticipate a full meeting on Friday?
I think there is one.
There is one, I believe.
I believe there is one scheduled. And then Thursday and Friday of next week, State Police is scheduled for work session. Likely not passing it out, but work session like we did today.
And I think
get through as much as possible.
The tentative plan right now that Doug and I worked out for next week is if DOJ takes longer, we're going to shelve that one too probably, but if DOJ takes longer than tomorrow, we will continue that over on to Tuesday. If not, we're going to not meet on Tuesday and Wednesday. And that's kind of the tentative plan. We don't have a lot of... No.
You mentioned Friday in there.
No, Thursday is State Police.
And Friday.
And Friday, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully that would be short if we were to do that. Okay. And I think the schedule is pretty crammed. If we're, you know, but until the major budget negotiations go on at a different pay grade than ours, we probably won't be able to. We'll probably just work session some of the budgets like this and leave some things hanging.
There are some budgets that are not worth even like DAs until decisions are made. Mm-hmm. I mean, there isn't much to work session there, or Criminal Justice Commission.
A little stir for the DOC budget next week.
Please give me a couple days of warning.
Bring your AED. Bring the AED to the floor. All right. With that, I appreciate everyone being here. Thanks, and we are adjourned.